headlines, the Yemeni army says it has launched drone attacks against a Saudi military base, killing and injuring scores of mercenaries. The Indian Prime Minister meets with Kashmiri leaders for the first time since the region's autonomy was revoked and calls for measures to speed up elections for the territory. Also ahead, nearly 100 people are unaccounted for after the collapse of a residential building near Miami Beach in the U.S. state of Florida. Thank you for joining us. Our top story this hour, the Yemeni army says its forces have launched a massive drone attack against Saudi targets. Earlier, we were joined by our Sana'a correspondent, Abdul Latif Washadi, who gave us more details about the strike. Let's take a listen.
The Yemeni army launched a wide operation, targeted a training camp in Al-Wadi'a area in the Saudi borders. There were a lot of soldiers and officers in that camp. 60 of them, including some officers, were killed and injured in this operation. The Yemeni army used 10 Qassaf K2 drones to hit the camp, and I believe that the Yemeni army used its sophisticated technology that the Yemeni army could to invent and develop during the last years. The Yemeni army said this operation was recorded, and they will publish the videos later, and this proved that the Yemeni army used its drones, spy drones, to detect the targets and to also to record this operation. And inshallah, we are waiting for the footage to be published.
Firas Al-Najm is the manager at the Canadian Defenders for Human Rights and joins us now. Firas, welcome. What do you make of the increasingly sophisticated retaliatory attacks by Yemeni forces against Saudi Arabia? I mean, we have to remember, when Saudi Arabia started this war in Yemen, one of the reasons it cited was that the Yemeni people are not Arabs. But when you look at the when you look at the patience of the Yemenis, you look at their willpower, you look at their courage, to use a phrase of the Lebanese resistance leader Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah, if the Yemeni people are not Arabs, then who are the Arabs?
The Yemeni nation is a very strong nation. The origins of the Arab tribes all originate from Yemen. And Yemen is, you know, this is their natural right. This is their logical right to respond back and to hit the bullies and the people that are attacking them. You know, it's not the Yemenis attacking the Saudis or any other nation or any other country. It's the Saudis that launched the war against Yemen, okay? And they're obviously instructed by the U.S. and logistical support by the biggest colonizers in the history of our modern era is Britain, U.K., and the U.S. And they're all helping, giving the logistical support to exactly hit where and what to do, because the Saudis have no history in military invasions or any wars. You know, the Saudis really, when Saddam attacked Saudi Arabia at that time before, they went and they asked the Americans to safeguard them and to respond. They couldn't respond. They were very scared back then. They didn't have any means to do anything to defend themselves. But now they're aggressing against a neighboring country where they're supposed to help your neighbor always and strengthen your neighbor, you know. And they always left Yemen to be in the worst conditions. You know, before the war started, Yemen was the the poorest Arab country. So if Saudi Arabia really cared, I mean, all these years they could have helped build Yemen, just like how they built Oman or they built Bahrain or built all these other regimes and these systems there. And the Yemenis, obviously, the leadership under Ansarullah and Sayyid Abdul Malik al-Houthi are very determined. They're very strong people, and they're very organized, and they learned more from this war. You know, we're going into 7 years of a war. You know, March 2015, the war started, right? And you're looking at them, they thought that all these sophisticated weapons, all these advanced weapons that are supported by all these countries, including Canada, unfortunately, our prime minister continues to sell weapons to the Saudi regime. Look at like it's the biggest arms deal in the Canadian history, and then our prime minister here sits around and goes to all these meetings and all these events and preaching human rights, preaching he cares about equality and cares about this, but then he sells arms. And the Yemenis, obviously, like I said, they are the origins of the Arabs. I mean, this advancement is the natural strengthening of a country being bombarded and blockaded.
Yeah. For us, you raised two very important points there. One being that, as you noted, Yemen is the poorest nation in the region. When you look at the manpower, you can't compare the two. One has hundreds of billions of dollars worth of arms from the West. It has the global media on their side. But there's also another point that I think is important to highlight here. At the start of this war on Yemen, the imam of the Grand Mosque in Saudi Arabia, I think in Mecca, delivered a speech and said the war on Yemen is a war on the Shia. Why? Why did he make it into a sectarian conflict? Some have said, is it so that mercenaries from the region, from Africa, where have you, can come and fight on behalf of the Saudis? Because the operation today took out a lot of mercenaries.
Well, the Saudis really don't have brain power, unfortunately, like the Saudi regime and these scholars that are obviously servants for the kingdom itself and the people that are ruling. And at the end of the day, the people that are ruling in Saudi Arabia are also the servants of the Americans and the British that installed them in power. And these people, they found that the best way to be able to mobilize and recruit people from around the Middle East and different places, because unfortunately we do have a lot of ignorance and we do have a lot of poverty in different areas, so they were able to ignite this sectarian war against Shias and Sunnis and trying to cause strife and wars between them and let it escalate and get stronger. And the thing is, the Saudis also have a lot of money. Don't forget, they're sitting on the oil, right? This oil is the black gold, as they call it, and they have a lot of money. And this money, they use it to buy, the consciousness of a lot of scholars, unfortunately. Obviously, not all the scholars. There's a lot of Sunni scholars that are standing up, that are obviously now they've seen that the Saudi regime is a friend of the Zionists, a friend of the Americans, a friend of the Islamophobic regimes, a friend of the regimes that are coming to control the region and take the resources and keep people in the weakest status.
Just so touching on another important point that you raised, at the same time, we have to give credit to the Sunni scholars who came out and said this is not a war on the Shia, this is a war that serves the United States and Israel.
Yes, I mean, this is, we have we have the deviant scholars such as Sudais and Sheikh al-Sheikh, the Mufti of Saudi Arabia, that has one eye. I'm not really trying to make fun of his eye, but I mean, the way that he acts and the way that he portrays himself as the main scholar that, represents Islam, and he's the furthest from that. He does not really see really what's going on in the Ummah. He only sees whatever the Saudi regime wants, whatever the palace is, and the services that he's getting. And the Sunni scholars, there's a lot of them that are standing up, such as the Mufti in Iraq. The Sunni Mufti in Iraq is making strong stands, and he's standing with the Hajj al-Sha'bi, with the popular mobilization forces, and standing against this American plot and the Zionist plot. Same thing with the Mufti of Syria. Same thing with a lot of scholars in Lebanon. I mean, all over the world, there's scholars. Here
Egypt,
in Canada, we have Zafar Bangash.
Yeah.
He always calls for reconciliation, for unity, to stand against our common enemy, and that is the one that's trying to occupy us and trying to empower the Zionist regime, to give them legitimacy, this illegitimate regime that's killing the Palestinians, that attacked Al-Aqsa Mosque, one of the holiest places for the Muslims, all Muslims, and they attacked it while it was Ramadan in the holiest nights. They declared a ground invasion in Eid. The Zionist regime is an enemy of Islam. It's an Islamophobic regime. Why these terrorist attacks are happening in the world is because of the Zionist regime. The Zionist regime is the one that, in media works day and night to try to portray Islamists with terrorists because of the conflict between the Palestinians and the Zionist occupiers. They're always working day and night with the Americans to try to develop a picture that the Muslims and the Muslim doctrine is a terrorist doctrine, and we're the furthest from that. And we've seen the work of the Canadian Muslims here, how hard they work here as frontline workers and supporting and strengthening this whole economy and this whole system. And You know, recently you guys heard about the terrorist attack. A lot of this happens from the Zionist media, brothers and sisters. I mean, this is something that people need to spread as awareness on social media, that the media has a big role in spreading hate against Muslims, and we need to stop this. And the governments need to stop this as well, because, you know, not everybody can control the hate and know how to use it.
Thank you very much for your contribution. For us, and Najem, the manager at the Canadian Defenders for Human Rights, joining us out of Ottawa. Now, following the United States' seizure of tens of Iranian and regional media websites, including that of Press TV, media activists have questioned the U.S.'s claim of an advocate for freedom of expression. Yusuf Jalali reports.
Following the U.S.'s seizure of Press TV and three dozen other Iranian and regional media websites, Press TV has moved to its alternative domain at presstv.ir. While this is not the first time the U.S. has targeted Press TV, it does raise the question of what makes American officials go out on a limb and violate basic principles of free speech to mute Press TV.
And I see a silver lining in all this, and the silver lining is the extent to which Press TV has been successful in its efforts to make the voice of the voiceless heard. And that's what Press TV is all about. And apparently, truth hurts.
Press TV first went on air in 2007 as Iran's only English-language news network. It works based on the motto of the voice of the voiceless and tries to cover stories that mainstream media usually boycott or underreport. A case in point is the Israeli occupation of Palestine. During the latest Israeli onslaught on the Gaza Strip in May this year, Press TV maintained active presence on the ground to shed light on Israeli crimes against the Palestinian people.
Of course, our responsibility was to show the reality on the ground, and I believe that we did that. We covered it well, and we had people on the ground interviewing Palestinians and showing the reality, because a lot of times what the mainstream media like to show is a different version. We were on the ground. The cameras were rolling when they were pulling kids from under the rubble.
And when it comes to the Saudi-led coalition's ongoing war on Yemen, Press TV has enlightened the minds of its viewers about how the U.S. and the U.K. are benefiting from the conflict by selling their arms to Saudi Arabia, only to drop them on Yemeni civilians.
Because I know when I'm in contact with different people around the world, especially other Americans or Europeans, and they didn't even know that the United States was involved in this, in this situation in Yemen. And I think that we have continually tried to expose the truth, showing the U.S. Giving the military support, drone strikes in various areas, and we know overall just supporting the Saudis. So, of course, this is all related. All of this has been related to the situation.
And the list goes on. U.S. police brutality against people of color, its destabilizing military presence in the region, its role in the emergence of Daesh terrorists, and so on. All were exposed in different programs on Press TV. The U.S.'s attempt to stifle Press TV's enlightening voice has a long history. YouTube and Facebook have taken down Press TV's web pages several times in the past. The news network has also been removed from TV broadcasting satellites in Europe, North America, and East Asia, largely due to pressure from the United States and some of its allies. Press TV is among the few independent news outlets that speak the unspoken truths, which in times have debunked the U.S. standing as a role model in the world. So observers say it should come as no surprise that Washington tries to pull the plug on Press TV. But that again proves that free speech is just a slogan there. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Elsewhere, the Indian Prime Minister has called for measures to speed up the election process for the Kashmir region. Narendra Modi made the remarks during his first meeting with some 14 Kashmiri leaders in New Delhi since the region's semi-autonomy was revoked. He described the meeting as an important step in the ongoing efforts towards a developed and progressive Jammu and Kashmir. During the meeting, Kashmiri politicians urged Modi to restore the region's autonomy. Modi's government stripped Kashmir of its constitutional autonomous status in August 2019. The Himalayan region has been divided between India and Pakistan since 1947. Now, the Speaker of the U.S. House of Representatives has announced the creation of a new committee to probe the January 6th attack on Capitol Hill.
This morning, with great solemnity and sadness, I'm announcing that the House will be establishing a select committee on the January 6th insurrection. Again, January 6th was one of the darkest days in our nation's history. I've said it now three times. It is imperative that we establish the truth of that day and ensure that an attack of that kind cannot happen.
Nancy Pelosi, however, declined to specify a timeline for the panel to investigate the incident, saying it could take as long as needed. The announcement comes nearly a month after Senate Republicans blocked a probe of the assault by an independent commission. The U.S. Justice Department says some 500 people have now been arrested in the sweeping federal investigation into the violence. Supporters of then-President Donald Trump stormed the Capitol on January 6th in a failed bid to stop Congress from certifying Joe Biden's election victory. The violence left five dead, including a Capitol Police officer. A 12-story residential building in the U.S. city of Miami-Dade, Florida, has partially collapsed, leaving at least one person dead.
Well, good afternoon. We all woke up in the early morning hours to see these really tragic scenes of a collapsed condominium complex. But I just want to give credit to the search and fire department, the first responders, Miami-Dade County. They were on that scene before we knew whether there'd be more collapse. We didn't know whether the building had any structural integrity, and they were shepherding people to safety. And they absolutely saved people's lives, and so we really appreciate all that they have done and that they're continuing to do.
Search and rescue operations are underway for almost 100 others who are reportedly still unaccounted for. Emergency responders who are trying to identify people who might be in the rubble and those who might not have been there at home. There was no immediate word on the cause of the collapse. The building was built in 1981 and was undergoing a recertification process requiring repairs. The residential complex had more than 130 units, some 80 of which were occupied. In Canada, the remains of more than 750 people have been found near another former Catholic school for Indigenous children. The remains were found in unmarked graves in the western province of Saskatchewan. An Indigenous group says the graves mostly belong to children. This is not the first time that such a horrific discovery has been made in Canada. Last month, the remains of 215 children were found at the site of another former Indigenous school, a residential school in British Columbia. Since then, Indigenous leaders have been calling on authorities for a thorough investigation. Thousands of Indigenous children in Canada were forcibly separated from their families during the last century to be sent to residential schools. Many of them were subjected to ill treatment and sexual abuse. That brings an end to our news bulletin for this hour. Thank you for staying tuned.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/ParsTodayEN. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/ParsTodayEnglish.
The limelight. Firefighters are battling to contain a wildfire that erupted near Big Sur last week as the flames continue to engulf the dry California landscape and threaten historical sites, cabins, and ranches. The fire is one of dozens of wildfires burning in hot, dry conditions across western United States, including in Arizona and New Mexico. The article you're about to hear has been written by the Guardian journalist Gabrielle Cannon, with contribution from the Associated Press. The piece is titled Big Sur Fire, Hundreds of Firefighters Battle Blaze Raging in California. Firefighters are battling to contain a wildfire that erupted near Big Sur in California last week as the flames continue to engulf the dry California landscape and threaten historical sites, cabins, and ranches. The fire is one of dozens of wildfires burning in hot, dry conditions across western United States, including in Arizona and New Mexico. In Monterey County, the so-called Willow Fire has burnt more than 2,400 acres of land since it broke out on Thursday evening, 17th of June. Roughly 450 firefighters faced the difficult task of trying to contain the large forest fire in the rugged coastal mountains south of Big Sur. The blaze remained at 0% containment as of Monday morning and forced the evacuation of a Buddhist monastery and nearby campground. The area is also home to endangered species and contains cultural sites that could be at risk if the wildfire continues to grow, and the Los Padres National Forest Resource Advisors have brought in biologists, botanists, and Chumash tribal members to aid in protecting sensitive areas. We have to take our time accessing these areas because we can't get the equipment in there, said Amanda Muncy, a public information officer with California Interagency Incident Management Team 11. The weather is also a big factor, she said, and it has been very hot for a number of days and very dry. Hundreds have been ordered to evacuate the mountainous area, including most of those at the Tassajara Mountain Zen Center, a historic Zen Buddhist monastery. Some Buddhist monks who are part of a trained fire crew stayed behind to assist in the firefight. The ZMC fire crew will remain in order to run the Dharma Rain, the Tassajara sprinkler system, and to prepare the monastery in case the fire reaches the valley, the center posted on its website on Sunday. The Tassajara has been working on special fire preparation project during the pandemic shutdown, and their fire crew has been in place and training for several months. Our water supplies are good and we are well prepared for this situation. The cause of the wildfire is still under investigation. The latest wildfire comes as the American West is gripped by a historic drought, as officials predict another record-breaking fire season. A heat wave has baked western United States, intensifying drought conditions and ignition risks much earlier in the year than normal. Already this year, 33 large wildfires have burnt more than 372,000 acres of land across 10 states, according to the National Interagency Fire Center. Right now in June, the dryness and the fuel conditions, it is what we would expect in August, says Muncy. It is alarming, but it is beyond our control, so we have prepared as best we can. There's hope that cooler weather expected with higher humidity across the San Francisco Bay Area in the coming days will help slow the flames, but there are concerns that winds along the ridges will continue to drive the wildfire and complicate containment efforts. But with so many wildfires already burning across western United States, resources have been strained. In Arizona, a blaze named the Backbone Fire that has burnt more than 32,750 acres of land after igniting last Wednesday from a lightning strike is also at 0% containment. Temperatures there have exceeded 100 degrees Fahrenheit, and thousands of residents have been evacuated northeast of Phoenix in the communities of Strawberry and Pine. There are major fires around Arizona and Utah and all over the western United States, Amanda Muncy, an information officer, said. That becomes problematic when trying to get resources to whatever fire you are on because they're already stretched so thin. Meanwhile, the mountainous city of Flagstaff, Arizona, was shrouded in smoke by another fire, dubbed the Raphael Fire, on Monday. If the fire continues its northeast push, hundreds of people in the College City, which lies about 2 hours north of Phoenix, Arizona, could be affected, according to officials. It's already been a tough wildfire season for Arizona, which has seen multiple blazes spark this summer. On Monday, two national forests in northern Arizona made rare announcements that they would close completely to visitors starting later this week because of concerns they won't have enough resources to respond to any future wildfires. And in New Mexico, lightning-sparked blazes have been scorching the southern part of the state, where a large portion of the Gila Wilderness remains closed. And fire officials are closely watching the Gila Cliff Dwellings National Monument.
Food for thought.
Hello, dear friends, and let us start the day with a short but sweet saying from Imam Ali ibn Musa al-Reza, peace be upon him. Refrain from using unlawfully obtained construction materials in your building, for these will ruin it.
Is there any other way to get familiar with Islam besides mainstream media? Try IRIB English Radio. log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Fiqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked
the Holy Prophet of Islam is the example
of
self-purification is the most significant
factor.
Imamat is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. Welcome to another episode of Ulama's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short speech by famous Iranian Shiite orator and lecturer, Hujjatul Islam Ali. Stay tuned.
آدم نباید نسبت به مؤمنین سوء ظن داشته باشه، بدبین باشه. شما تو قرآن همتون سوره حجرات رو دیدید.
We Muslims must not be pessimist about our other Muslim brothers or sisters. We have in the Holy Quran Surah Hujarat that we must avoid different types of pessimism and suspicion. Many of our pessimism are sins. We must not be pessimist about our friends, colleague, relatives, spouse, or neighbor. We have in our narrations that even if we see something unpleasant in our surroundings, we must not consider it as something evil or a sin. For instance, if your friend reaches you without saying salams, or he shows inattentive towards you in a meeting, you must not be pessimist about this behavior of his and think badly about him or her. You cannot refer to such behaviors as complex or disease. Maybe your friend's mind is busy with something.
امیر المومنین علیه السلام فرمود اطلب لأخی کالمؤمن عذرن.
Imam Ali alayhi salam stated, always find a justification for the strange behaviors of your friends. And if you couldn't find any excuse or reason for his behaviors, try your best to make one. This sentence of Imam Ali means that we must not be pessimistic about some of the strange behaviors of the people around us. In this way, we might not keep any animosity inside our hearts. Thank you very much, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, for listening to this episode of Ulama's Speech, which was the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Ali. To find out more about this program, log on to our website, parstoday.com, Call of Islam page. We leave you in Allah's care. Fi amanallah.
Jordanian woman is receiving high demands for the soaps she produces. Why? Because she uses an unusual ingredient. Lara Al-Titi makes soap out of camel milk. She tours different cities in Jordan to find the best camel farms for her business. Titi uses camel milk as the main ingredient for the soaps she produces. That's because she says it has rich benefits and contains more vitamins than cow's milk.
The first stage includes weighing the soap, and I include different kinds of oil to preserve the quality of the soap and its therapeutic benefit. We need to have high foam and tough consistency, and we don't want it to be rancid. We place high importance on the therapeutic material that we add during the production process.
Titi started her soap line at home using a manual process and then expanded it to an independent workshop. Her soap line has now become very popular in Jordan. Titi produces more than 4,000 soap bars a month. She sells them to both domestic and international customers.
The German firm's electric air taxi takes its first flight at a show in an airport near the French capital, Paris. Volocopter's flying taxi, which looks like a tiny helicopter, took off and landed vertically over the airport with no passenger on board during a three-minute trial. Aside from its two-passenger capacity, the aircraft also has some room for luggage. It flew a 500-meter route at speeds of up to 30 kilometers per hour and 30 meters high along the airfield. The flying taxi service would first be operated by a licensed pilot, but the flight would be fully automated over a period of time.
With respect to regulation, initially we will have a fully certified, fully licensed helicopter pilot, just to fit into existing regulation. But we believe over time it can be much simpler to obtain such an operating license for a volocopter. And of course, in the last instance, we want to take a pilot requirement out, and we want these vehicles to fly fully automated. So you will not need a pilot license anymore. You can just summon the volocopter, it will come and pick you up and bring you safely to your destination.
The German firm is entering the urban mobility market with high hopes of playing a major role in the infant industry. Volocopter says its objective is to have a service in operation for 2024 for the 2024 Olympic Games. walking around the city without shoes can be delightful. If you're interested in the experience, visit the Russian capital. A 3.5-kilometer long barefoot trail has recently opened in Moscow's Elk Island Park. It's made of various materials such as pine bark, beach pebbles, and clay. Taking around 40 minutes to complete, the path attracts hundreds of visitors every day. However, some people find it difficult to walk without shoes, calling the path a torture trail. A zoo in Turkey has welcomed a baby elephant from an endangered species. The birth of a female calf at Izmir Wildlife Park has caused excitement in keepers and visitors. The calf, yet to be named, is the third offspring of parents from Asian species. The International Union for the Conservation of Nature classifies the Asian elephant as endangered due to their rapid decline in the wild. The Asian elephants are primarily threatened by poaching, fragmentation, and loss and degradation of habitat. Currently, around 20 to 40,000 Asian elephants are living across the world, five of which inhabiting Turkey's Izmir Zoo.
Over 300 classic vehicles have taken part in a retro rally across Estonia. The 1,000-kilometer rally kicked off in the town of Paide. It drew participants from Latvia and Finland. Their motto is Straight Ahead to the Past. The vintage cars participated in the event are mostly produced between 1930 and 1980. Experts say all the vehicles are in good condition. However, they doubt if all the vehicles can make it to the end of the five-day rally. A Palestinian artist has come up with the idea of making children feel happy after the recent Israeli aggression on the besieged Gaza Strip left many people dead. Amna Sami is a young Palestinian artist who has gathered Palestinian kids in the city of Beit Lahia, north of Gaza. That's where houses were destroyed by Israeli airstrikes and bombings during the recent aggression on the territory. Sami draws the Palestinian flag as well as the map of Palestine on children's cheeks as patriotic symbols. She says she does that to say that these people in the midst of destruction will become strong again. Sami says by painting on kids' faces, she wants to send a message to the world.
I'm sending a message to the world that our children should live like other children in the world, away from danger and destruction. It is their right in life to live as children in a safe place, a place that gives them something to live a normal life.
Palestinian kids say they feel happy when Sami paints their faces. The Israeli regime launched this devastating onslaught on Gaza. In early May, at least 256 Palestinians, including 66 children, were killed during the 11-day war. A Turkish band has found musical inspiration in a most unlikely place, a local landfill. Here's more. Members of Funk Istanbul have assembled instruments from the dump in a junkyard in Istanbul. They use their ingenious new tools to play Turkish folk music. The band aims to raise awareness about recycling. Turkey is one of the biggest producers of municipal waste globally. The country has a low recycling rate. Only 12% of waste is repurposed there.
Technology has come in handy to rescue animals in disaster zones. American cinematographer Douglas Thron has used a high-tech infrared drone to save animals from fire or storm, or even those who are stuck in trees. The drone he uses has a large thermal camera, a spotlight, and zoom lens. The good point is that the aerial vehicle does not make too much noise. Therefore, it does not scare away animals.
So what I do is I fly infrared drones primarily at night over disaster areas after a hurricane or a fire hits, and I look for people's pets, whether it be cats or dogs, and I also look for injured wildlife. And then either I or rescue crews will go in and rescue the animals after I spot the animals after these natural disasters.
Thron has so far rescued hundreds of stranded animals in various places in the US and Australia. Emergency services have allowed him to participate in rescue efforts after making sure that the drone works well to achieve its goal.
The Light is a short bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
A video has gone viral showing animals at a U.S. zoo enjoying their bath time becoming clean as a new pimp. Keepers at Chicago's Brookfield Zoo washed the animals to celebrate International Bath Day. From anteaters to rhinos all got sprayed with a water hose. They seemed to love their bath time as it kept them cool in the summer heat. Zoo officials say the occasion is to honor ancient Greek scientist Archimedes, who made a discovery while in the bath. You might be pleased to know life is going back to normal as countries around the world are easing coronavirus restrictions. Disneyland in the French capital, Paris, is saying bonjour to visitors once again with all necessary precautions. Bet everyone missed that. The theme park reopened its doors to the public with limited tickets and an online reservation system. All visitors over 6 years old are required to wear face masks and to observe social distancing guidelines. New attractions, including a hotel and various car rides, are also available for guests. Disneyland Paris was shut for over 7 months due to rising COVID-19 infections. This is the first time since January 2020 that all the six Disney resorts are open. Children have their own ways of remembering the dead. In Gaza, Palestinian kids fly kites in memory of their peers who lost their lives in the recent Israeli onslaught. Dozens of kids participated in the event, holding kites bearing the pictures of 66 little victims. According to the organizers, the goal was to send a message to people around the world that Palestinian kids have the right to live a free and happy life. The children said their dream is to fly in the sky without any restrictions or wars. Of wild Asian elephants in China has turned into international stars after leaving their natural habitat in Yunnan province. The herd of 15 elephants is said to have left home in southwest China 15 months ago, but it was in April when they grabbed officials' attention after they were spotted by locals. The elephants have so far trekked nearly 500 kilometers across the country. They have traveled through villages and towns and even stopped for a rest. Local authorities have welcomed these mammoth travelers with treats of sweet corn and bananas. They are monitoring the elephants' movements with drones while keeping them away from residential areas.
Chinese grandma has given a dazzling display of her masterly kung fu performance at a martial arts competition. The 98-year-old woman and her son took the stage as a curtain raiser to the event. The duo put on a kung fu show before a large crowd of spectators who were impressed by her skillful gestures. She was invited to the competition to act as a judge.
I started practicing martial arts when I was only five. I would box every day, learning movements like chopping,
pushing palm and thrusting palm. Though I am old now, my strength hasn't gone.
Zhang says she's inherited her family's martial arts. She's rumored to have a sense of justice from a very young age and try to help others, which earned her quite a reputation where she lives. Traditional martial arts have been passed down in the Zhongqing village located in Zhejiang province for 500 years. Go to Italy, where Mount Etna has put on an eye-catching show with its spectacular eruptions. Red-hot lava fountains and plumes of smoke spewed up into the sky. The main eruption was located at the southeastern crater of the volcano. Mount Etna is Europe's tallest active volcano. It's located above the Sicilian town of Catania. It often erupts but rarely causes damage. However, nearby residents have to deal with ash showers. Geological studies show that Mount Etna has been active for more than 2 million years now. Egypt has opened its first archaeological replica factory in an attempt to promote its culture worldwide. The factory was inaugurated in response to people's demand for having detailed copies of ancient treasures. So far, over 6,400 high-quality replicas of ancient Egyptian artifacts have been produced. More than 150 artists work to make the goods out of stone, wood, and even gold.
The materials with which these are made are high quality. The highest and most elegant materials are being used to make these samples, and the materials are very close to those used to make the original artifacts.
The models have certificates showing that they are identical copies of the original artifacts. Each replica also has a barcode that provides extra information about the item. The factory is located in Kayuba, about 35 kilometers northeast of the capital, Cairo.
Now, a lot of people don't like rats and find them disgusting most of the time. However, the rodents are doing life-saving work in Cambodia. Now, the Southeast Asian nation has deployed a new squad of African giant pouched rats to sniff out old landmines. The new recruits have shown an exceptional ability at their task, with their handlers claiming 100% accuracy. There are now nearly 50 demining rats working in the field in Cambodia. The country started using the animal services in 2016, and they have helped detect and clear hundreds of landmines since. Last year, an especially heroic rat called Magawa attracted global fame after receiving a gold medal for his work. The hero rat, who is now retired, detected over 71 landmines.
A muralist from Greece is blending mythology with graffiti and street art to depict how COVID-19 has impacted lives around the globe. Ficus Antonios has painted the walls of many cities around the globe. He is now in the Cypriot capital, Nicosia, to continue his work. His latest artwork depicts Americus, a Cypriot mythical figure who was punished by the gods and turned into a plant. The Greek artist believes this theme is similar to the situation people around the globe have experienced since the pandemic began. He explains many people have grown roots because they're staying in one place for so long.
The bustle of life. The sound of living. Only sound will endure.
Hello.
IRIB English Radio.
limelight.
Tens of thousands of European Union citizens living in the United Kingdom will be issued with a formal 28-day notice if they have failed to apply for post-Brexit settled status within a week, the British government has warned. The notices will tell them to submit an application or risk consequences which include losing their rights to healthcare and to employment. The article you're about to hear has been written by The Guardian columnist Lisa O'Carroll. The piece is titled, EU citizens in UK face 28-day notice if they miss settled status deadline. Tens of thousands of European Union citizens living in the United Kingdom will be issued with a formal 28-day notice if they have failed to apply for post-Brexit settled status within a week, the British government has warned. The notices will tell them to submit an application or risk consequences which include losing their rights to healthcare and to employment. With only a week to go now before the Wednesday, 30th of June deadline for the European Union settlement scheme, the Home Office is redoubling its efforts to reach those who do not know about the rule change, including vulnerable groups such as the elderly and children in care. Immigration Minister Kevin Foster said it had ruled out extending the deadline despite a huge surge in applications, now running at 10,000 to 12,000 a day. Put simply, extending the deadline is not the solution to reaching those people who have not yet applied. And we would just be in a position further down the line where we would be asked to extend again, creating more uncertainties, he said. However, Kevin Foster said EU citizens who had failed to apply by the deadline would not see their social welfare benefits cut off from 1st of July and promised the Home Office would be flexible and lenient. The Home Office has had 5.6 million settled status applications from European Union citizens, including some repeats. Officials revealed a backlog of 400,000, which may take until the end of summer to process. It has received 1.5 million helpline calls and 500,000 requests for help through an online contact form, an indication of the unprecedented scale of the exercise and the challenges that many are facing.